Hi, this is Charles on democraticfundamentalism.org with the news in review. It's Tuesday, the 22nd of October. If you're clicking in from another website, democraticfundamentalism.org has a section in it called the news in review. On that, you can go to the news in review section and find this text, and we've got links to the stories to fill you in more on all the things I'll be talking about tonight. You know, it always amazes me how much so many people who care about the world so much spend so much time working on the symptoms of problems and not the actual root of the problems. You know, it's one of those symptoms, not the disease kind of things. One of my favorite examples of this comes from my work with nonprofit organizations working to end poverty. In most cases, people choose to work on international problems instead of U.S. national problems. The perception is that it costs less to do more good in foreign countries. In addition, it's perceived that the need in other countries is greater than in the United States. And people believe that the systems and power structures in the United States are so corrupt or dominated by big money and corporations that the average person doesn't stand a chance in getting a simple need of the people any attention, let alone productive attention. The other thing I've noticed about all these same people is that they work on their causes, say, welfare reform, and they work on it for years. It's very much like the case of the 1996 Welfare Reform Act, which was good for an American government to have passed, but greatly ineffective in actually addressing poverty and the needs of the poor. Activists claimed a huge victory when it passed, but it was one step forward, two steps back. All that they had attained in that legislation had been taken away in previous years, and so the net effect was less than what they had worked for. Sometimes I think that government just keeps these people in the nonprofits busy while they go on and do the real work that they're doing. One time I was riding in a helicopter from a downtown New York helipad to the home of the helipad, one of the richest people in the world and members of one of the wealthiest families in the world, to discuss the issue of poverty reduction. We flew by one venue on the way, which was close to his house. Someone mentioned how ugly the area was, and this wealthy person retorted, "Oh, it's all right. I live around the corner. There are trees in the way, and I don't have to look at that." People of wealth are not affected by business and corporate policy. They are above it. They can ignore the damage those policies do. People in politics are not affected by their policies because they know what's going on, so they can avoid the pitfalls. It's sort of the ultimate of insider trading. And all the news people and entertainment people who actually set the trends, make the news, and decide what's important to report, after a while it just becomes another story. I heard one reporter complain that people who watch the news all day don't understand that most people don't watch all day. And for those who tune in every now and again, for a few minutes at a time, expect that news of the sniper shootings be on when they do tune in. We can certainly understand needing to pass the news between the day parts. After a while, though, you have to wonder if what's being reported is necessary or just the fluff that people want to hear. Have to wonder if it serves a purpose after a while. There are people starving all over the world. War is near in the Middle East on a number of fronts. But all we hear about are the symptoms of the problems, not the root causes. And the symptoms keep compounding themselves and multiplying, while the real problem is left untouched. And the real problem is a disinformed public and a system of power in the United States that encourages us to remain that way. That way they can get away with something. We've always taken for granted that the press reports the truth to the people. They're the fourth estate, after all, something of an early warning system. At least that's what they used to be. Now, like politicians and corporate leaders, they're forced to set aside important information in exchange for jobs, benefits, interviews with leaders who will not talk to them otherwise, and advertisers looking to sell products. Since the average citizen doesn't buy advertising and couldn't afford it even if they wanted to, we become just statistics, and our lives become trends. The human toll of policies and ignoring the results of our actions as institutions and as individuals is reduced to the averaging of the effect. The justification is that most people are covered. The justification is that there are so many people that some will simply slip through the cracks. And that's just the way it goes. And like I said, those in the position to make the decisions are removed from the suffering and the indignities of the policies they report and pass judgment on. Now, let's be fair. You can't point the finger at only one group. It's like all an unwanted mass extortion, each segment of the deception holding each other to secrecy as they play the game. But the results, the rippling effects, show up at this point in history. Is it no wonder, a coincidence, mind you, that as I wrote that sentence, Lou Dobbs reports that according to Dilbert, the Weasleyest people are reporters, corporate executives, and politicians. Dilbert's definition of a weasel is anyone who's trying to get away with something. Even more poignant, though, is James Carville's comment, you know what happens to weasels? They pop. Now, that's what we need to do. We need to pop something and wake up our reps and reporters to what they create with their words and actions and inactions. It's got everything to do with what's really important in the next election. And it's not about Iraq or North Korea. It's about the value system being used to create future policies and relationships with other nations and with each other as citizens. And what the distortion and corruption causes us to do in our efforts to defend human rights and dignity. Our own human rights and our own dignity. Here we are, poised for war, forests having burned throughout the summer, throughout the world, with concerns that natural resources won't last much longer, and that plants and animals are dying at increasing rates. And there are all sorts of biblical implications to world and natural events. And as we complete the plunder and move on to bigger and better things, where do we turn? To space. Always planning ahead. Let's see. China is planning to put a military base on the moon. The Russians say manned flights to Mars are a priority. The grab for land on space is on. Several companies are creating tourist rides for suborbital flights. I can't wait. So I decided to take a few unusual stories today that remove us from the everyday headlines a little. And I thought I'd just ask why it is that NASA would have a secretive plan for space exploration. Why does it need to be secret? This from space.com, NASA reveals a secret plan for the moon, Mars, and outward. To boldly go, the timeless and optimistic space age theme looks to have been reclaimed from a NASA lost and found drawer as long-range planners prepare to reveal next month a new roadmap for robotic and human missions to deep space. The 21st century science-driven agenda is designed to propel exploration beyond the International Space Station and involves a new habitation complex that would be built between Earth and the Moon, serving as a portal to Mars and other solar system targets. NEXT has a strong track record for steering NASA to embrace several new initiatives. An in-space propulsion program is underway. A nuclear systems initiative is being pursued. Starting next year, a radiation program is scheduled to begin, said Lisa Guerra, special assistant to the associate administrator in the Office of Biological and Physical Research. Some of this work is essential in preparing for crewed missions to Mars. It would be a combination of looking at radiation health issues with the crew and a program tied to the space station, Guerra said. Ground research will also assess potential alternatives to active or passive shielding for future missions. Shoving off to places like Mars in speedier fashion, through nuclear propulsion, as an example, can cut down crew exposure time to radiation. In addition, taking a fast route to the Red Planet also minimizes prolonged human exposure to the debilitating effects of microgravity. Now, personally, I like the idea of space travel. I just wish all that thinking and technology that makes space so attractive could be put to use to clean up Earth before we go off to exploit other worlds until they're ruined. But that seems to be the paradox. What do you do in a world where, for example, 60% of the citizens of the United States live in or near poverty? 60%! Where one-third of the world can't get medical care for treatable ailments simply because manufacturers and governments don't make them available, as in the passive genocide of Africa. And so in a world where we should be able to reasonably expect that leaders will tend to current needs and clean up their messes that hurt those of us in the working class, the owning class continues on as if their messes are there for the working class to clean up, because they're above it. Doesn't affect them. It leaves us to fight for the values the owning class waves over our heads like a banner to keep us in tow. Values like appreciating the little things in life, integrity, compassion, and a real work ethic, while they reap the profits of our labor and suffering. And it all leads to struggles, fights, divisiveness, partisanship. It's even extending to space already. Again, from space.com, from the World Space Congress, a scientist is to ask the United Nations to declare the moon a World Heritage Site. A U.S. ecologist is prepared to throw a monkey wrench into those who want to develop space. Richard Steiner is prepared next week at the World Space Congress to call for a kinder and gentler paradigm for space exploration. He will call for the United Nations to regulate all human activity in space. Furthermore, he wants to have the UN designate the moon as a World Heritage Site, free from commercial development. Steiner, a professor and conservation specialist at the University of Alaska Marine Advisory Program, wants to protect the moon from greedy industrialists, empire builders, or those with militant intention. In a statement made available to space.com, Steiner said, "If the moon belongs to anyone, it belongs to everyone." If the moon was defiled by some of the commercial development proposals in consideration at present, then humanity would be forever diminished, Steiner explains. What goes on there should be the domain of not just the aerospace engineers and astronomers, but also the poets, musicians, artists, teachers, young and old, rich and poor. Personally, it's just hard for me to imagine that we would even need to struggle at all to force others to respect natural beauty and art. But in the corporate frame of mind, they're kind of superfluous things. Can always get more. Seen one tree, you've seen them all. I always love it when Walter Cronkite comes around. He always says the right stuff, but he says the right stuff sends the wrong message. Broadcaster Walter Cronkite gave the movie The Right Stuff a thumbs down for its sardonic portrayal of the American Mercury astronauts in the early 1960s. The way the movie treated that particular book itself, I didn't think it did justice to our NASA astronauts or the NASA program, he told attendees at the World Space Congress in Houston. Cronkite gave a verbal thumbs up to the movies 2001 A Space Odyssey, Apollo 13, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. They thrilled us, they inspired us, they enlightened us, they filled us with awe. They made us laugh and sometimes cry. They asked the big question of who we are. What is our place in the universe? A rather important question, I think, Cronkite said. In America, it seems we've decided that our place in the universe is to expand economic markets and dominate other nations into submission. Though that doesn't sound like a Christian-based nation to me. Every once in a while, amidst the Larry King programs and Aaron Browns and talks with Walter Cronkite and Hugh Downs and Warren Buffett and others, someone stands up and truly inspires us. They take a chance and say what they really think, not what's expected or easy or comfortable or politically correct. That's what Sean Penn did the other day. Actor Sean Penn on Friday weighed in on the international debate over a possible war with Iraq, paying for a $56,000 advertisement in the Washington Post, accusing U.S. President George Bush of stifling debate and threatening civil liberties. In an open letter to Bush, taking up most of a page in the main section of the daily newspaper, the Oscar-nominated star of I Am Sam and Dead Man Walking urged the president to stop a cycle where bombing is answered by bombing, mutilation by mutilation, and killing by killing. "I beg you, help save America before yours is a legacy of shame and horror," Penn wrote, echoing voices of caution from around the world that have called for a measured response to allegations Iraq is developing weapons of mass destruction. The letter was signed sincerely, Sean Penn, San Francisco, California. A spokesman for the Washington Post confirmed that it was placed by the Hollywood celebrity, who has starred in more than 40 movies. Quoting Bush's declaration that the world was either with us or against us in the war on terrorism launched after the September 11, 2001 attacks, Penn, 42 years old, said Bush was marginalizing critics, manipulating the media, and promoting fear. Those actions in your administration's deconstruction of civil liberties all contradict the very core of the patriotism you claim, Penn wrote. Sacrificing American soldiers or innocent civilians in an unprecedented preemptive attack on a separate sovereign nation may well prove itself a most temporary medicine, he said. And to think, with all the political leaders and reporters in the world, it took an actor spending $56,000 to say what we've all been too afraid to say and acknowledge in public all this time. That our government does not represent the people, and it does not reflect the values of the people of this nation. That's why the upcoming elections are so important. And as much as I'm disappointed with the Democratic Party's lack of creativity in seeking ways to act as leaders in a very unfriendly political environment, I must point out that for any political party to have total control over the government is a very bad thing. We've already been complaining over the Bush administration's lack of willingness to consult with other leaders, let alone how they refuse to share information, let alone what the Department of Ashcroft does. For example, Cheney still refuses to turn over information regarding his contacts with Enron and the development of energy policy. And the Bush administration withheld its knowledge that Korea had nuclear weapons until after the Iraqi resolution was passed. Now, that's not someone running a government. That's someone with an ulterior motive. That's why it's important that we make sure one party does not get control of the government. We just don't need any more weasels. Part of the history of countries that have a fixed election is that in the next election, people feel like their votes don't count, and so they don't vote again. In the primaries, only 7% of Democratic and 8% of Republican voters bothered to go to the polls. Right now, surveys indicate that only 50% of television stations across the United States are even bothering to cover the elections at all. So when you're giving some thought to what will make the biggest difference in the next election, consider just reminding your friends and family to vote in the first place. That will make the biggest difference. After that, consider voting, especially in the Senate races, for Democratic candidates, if only to keep the checks and balances of our government in place. And of course, call your local media, call your newspapers, call your TV stations, call your radio stations, and tell them to cover the elections and inform America. Then, in the 2004 elections, we can proceed to change the world with our own candidates, and democracy will still be intact. Hanging on by a thread, mind you, but intact. I'll settle for that for now. And that's a wrap. This is Charles, DemocraticFundamentalism.org. You have a good night.